Today we're going to have one of Kansas City's own, Dr. Carmelita Williams, who's the executive director of the Black Archives of Mid-America. And we're going to find out a lot about Kansas City history that prominent African-Americans played in getting things done in Kansas City. So we're getting ready to get started. So hang on. We'll be right back with you in about a minute.
The views and opinions of this program are those of its host and guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of 90.1 FM, KKFI, Midcoast Radio Project, or its staff and volunteers.
And we're right back with you. And usually we start out with Kansas City Blues, but and that's by Charlie Parker. But right now it's cold enough outside that it's giving everybody the blues. Dr. Carmelita Williams, are you with us, ma'am?
I am with you.
Good morning.
Thank you for the invitation.
Thank you for coming. I mean, I was kind of blown away when I visited the archives last week, but can you tell us just a little bit about yourself?
Kansas City girl, born and raised. I grew up in what's known as the old 54th Street neighborhood between Prospect and Waldron and 55th and 53rd Street. We still are together as a community. Went to Southeast High School, UMKC, and the University of Kansas for my degree. I have two wonderful sons and four amazing grandkids.
How long have you been the executive director of the Black Archives of Mid-America?
I've been here 2 years. It was 2 years in November.
What is the role of the executive director there?
It's to keep this place afloat. It is an amazing organization. We collect, we preserve, we share artifacts of all kinds, 3D artifacts, pictures, documents, etc. But we also share our building. We have we have a fixed exhibit. The name of it is With My Eyes No Longer Blind, which was taken from a Langston Hughes poem. But we have other galleries where we have temporary exhibits. The one going on now is named Valor, and it's about black fighters, fighting people, men and women, from Africa to the current military.
Yeah, we're going to get into that one. Being ex-military, when I walked in and saw that, was the first thing that caught my attention. Is that was kind of a wow moment for me. The one of the things is, before we get started, who actually founded the Black Archives of Mid-America? Because a lot of people may not know that.
It was founded by Horace Peterson II, and Horace started out in middle school. Collecting buttons and brochures and storing them in the trunk of his car. And he would tell his friends that one day he was going to open a black museum. And they told him he was crazy, he'd never make any money doing it, nobody wanted that, et cetera. But he persisted. And he built this collection. He went to Washington, D.C. and studied archival procedures. And this is actually the fourth or fifth archives. Will start with the trunk of his car, and then he had an archive at the Paseo YMCA on 19th and Paseo. And then when that building was uninhabitable for a while, he rented an apartment for the archives. And then with desegregation, he was able to get the black firehouse, fire station number 11 at 2033 Vine, and this is the fifth archive. Horace didn't live to see the archives in this building, but his friends and people who knew him keep telling me that he would be very happy.
Yes, I will say this. It was, for somebody who, I love museums and I'd never been there before, and walking in, and it was just a lot of history. I mean, I've been to Birmingham, and I've saw the place where Martin Luther King was, when he wrote letters from a Birmingham jail, and I walked around the downtown and saw a lot of different things, and it was like a time warp back into history to see some of the things that you all had on hand to categorize African Americans and their impact on history. And some of it is locally, but a lot of it is more than just locally. I mean, you opened up talking a little bit about Langston Hughes, and a lot of people don't know that he's from Missouri. He's a Missourian. He's one of our own, native born.
Right. He was born in Joplin and raised in Lawrence, Kansas, by his grandmother. You know, one of the beauties of this place to me is that the archives doesn't buy anything. So everything that we have here, somebody thought was important to understanding African-American life and history and culture. So they donated it. Every picture, every document, every letter, every uniform, every wheelchair that we have here, somebody gave it to the Black Archives because they thought it was important. That's just the pinnacle of this job for me, is to preserve those things that that people want. We do oral histories. You know, we got a grant one time, and we proposed to interview 18 people over 80 and collect their oral histories. But once we posted that we were doing that, people were showing up in suit and ties to be videoed because they thought their stories were important, too. And that's what the archives does. We lend importance and credibility to the lives of people of African descent.
So what is the mission? You've already covered a little bit of it. What is the mission of the Black Archives of Mid-America?
Well, it's like a 4 or 5 sentence statement. But basically what we do is collect, preserve, share, and educate about African-American life. And particularly in this region, in Kansas City and the Midwest, although you're right, we have artifacts from Africa and from all over the country here.
And what year did Mr. Peterson found the Black Archives of Mid-America?
1974 is the official date.
You're relatively young, even though he collected for many years before that. You're not really even 50 years old just yet.
No, 46 years old. It's amazing and how it's growing still. I had a gentleman show up in my office. You know, this has been in the last year and a half, who started women's professional basketball right here in Kansas City. And then, like the Negro Leagues baseball, once the money and power takes over that, then they lose out. And he showed up in my office and he said, "I just want these women to be recognized." So we have the Women's Professional Basketball Hall of Fame here at the Black Archives.
And I was going to get into that a little bit later, but we'll open it up with that now. A lot of people think that, you know, the Seattle Storm, Houston Comets was the first instance of women's professional basketball, but that's not so. Women's professional basketball had its roots and its start here in Kansas City, just like our Jazz.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It was started by a man named Lightning Mitchell, and last year, pre-pandemic, we had a soft opening of the Hall of Fame, and some of the players and owners from all over the country came here, and they were just so happy and grateful to see their histories acknowledged and their hard work.
So, and I know a lot of people right now have to be asking this question. They've been around Kansas City, but where is the Black Archives currently located?
Thank you for asking. We're at 1722 East 17th Terrace. We're at 17th Terrace in Highland, in the 18th and Vine Jazz District. If you walk out the back door of the Jazz Museum or the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum, you're in our parking lot. We share the space, the parking lots, with the Urban Youth Academy and with the Greg Kleist Community Center. We're half a block down from the Juke House. And it's a beautiful stone building. It's a big building, so it's hard to miss. Woodland is to the east of us, and Paseo is to the west.
And I will tell anybody that wants to go there that as you make that right-hand turn right there off of East 17th Terrace, don't turn into the first parking lot that's right next to Bethel Church. Turn into the second parking lot, because there's no connection between the first and second parking lot. So you have to turn to the second one right there. There was a big truck there that day. But if you make that right-hand turn, that second parking lot puts you right in front of the Black Archives. And what are the hours of operation for the Black Archives?
We're open Monday through Friday from 10 to 5. We are usually open on Saturday, but with the pandemic, we had to shut down, close down some of our operations. So Monday through Friday, 10 to 5, and there's no charge. It's free to come visit. So please do bring people with you. You have to wear a mask to get into the building, but we do have extras if you come off without one.
And you beat me to that one because I was going to ask that question. Is there a charge? Now, for those that may want to help the Black Archives, you are also a 501c3 nonprofit, correct?
That's right. That's right. So all of your donations are tax deductible. And we have a Friends of the Black Archives program. If you go to our website, blackarchives.org, you can contribute there. You can join the Friends program there. You can make donations to us.
So one of the things...
Or you can send us a check, or you can come in and just deposit.
And again, that address is 1722 East 17th Terrace, Kansas City, Missouri, yes. 64108. And yes. What's the phone number in case somebody wants to get a call to the Black Archives?
Thank you. It's 816-221-1600. 816-221-1600.
And I'll mention it now, but in the end also, the Black Archives also does have a web address. Can you give people that web address where they can go online and learn more about the Black Archives?
Thank you. It's www.blackarchives.org.
And one of the things that I noticed when I was there, something that I've seen in bigger museums, but I didn't think that I would ever see there, is that a lot of your exhibits are interactive and you have little devices that people can take with them as they walk through and find out information. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
We're trying to move towards making this an interactive museum, and so we do have the headsets where the wonderful voice of Michael Patton, one of our board members, narrates the journey through the fixed exhibit. We're also creating a hologram for the we have partnered with the Equal Justice Initiative with the Community Remembrance Project. That's the lynching project. And they have identified where people were victims of racial murder in our area. So we have an exhibit there, and we'll have a hologram there so that people can hear one of the victims tell his own story. And you can go through and you can look and share, and we try to have handouts and voices and music to help make this a full experience for people.
And we're going to dive a little bit into that a little bit more, because that's a part of a larger project that is out of Montgomery, Alabama, with the museum there, where they have, as a teaser, when I stop right there, but that just know that's part of a very large project. Dr. Williams, one of the projects the Black Archives has in partnership with Kansas City Public Library and local investment community is a booklet on Kansas City Black history. Can you tell the listeners a little bit about the book?
We were really excited about doing this book. Every year, that group, the partnership, for the last 11 years, has done a Black History Month calendar. But since this is Missouri's bicentennial, we decided to make something a little more substantive. So we created this book. So everyone who has ever been featured in the calendars is in this book. And in addition, we added some new people. There's some poetry, some essays, et cetera. An essay from the mayor, greeting from the mayor. I have an essay. And a couple other people do, because we wanted it to be a commemorative book. We want it to be evergreen, something that people can own and hold on to and keep and share. They're free. We have them here at the Black Archives. You can come and pick up a couple, whatever your needs are. Also, the Kansas City Public Libraries have copies of that book. And they're also at no cost.
And that is a great reason to be able to come by the archives, not only visit the archives, but to pick up one of those free books, which is right there on the counter. And there's so much history about people that have lived in our area or have come to move, that lived in our area but moved away but did such great things. And, you know, one of the names in the book is Private Wayne Minor. And everybody in Kansas City knows the Wayne Minor housing projects. Mm-hmm. He was a Kansas Cityan. He was one of the last people killed in World War One. And Private Minor gave his life because he volunteered for a dangerous mission that nobody else wanted to do. Wayne Minor Housing Development and Wayne Minor Clinic, which is now Samuel Rogers Clinic, renamed in honor of the founder of the clinic, Dr. Rogers. And you currently have a huge military display on hand called Valor. And when I walked in, I saw the uniforms. I saw things from Africa. I saw things from Army. I saw things from Navy. I saw things from Air Force. And that was the first thing that caught my eye when I came in. Can you tell our listeners a little bit more about Valor?
Yes, it's an amazing exhibit that was curated by Taylor Jackson, our adjunct curator here. And he wanted to make sure that it was representative of all of the branches of service. So there's a Marine Corps uniform in addition to the ones that you named, but also the roots of Black heroism. So there are two 3D art pieces by George Mayfield, and they are of African warriors. Also, there's a POW table, which is militarily correct to honor those people who were prisoners of war. We also know that blacks joined the military for many reasons, but they weren't often honored for their service. So that's part of what this exhibit does. One of those uniforms belongs to Commander Carlton Philpott, who was the commander at Fort Leavenworth, and he was responsible for getting the Buffalo Soldiers monument there and also for getting the 6888 monument installed. We know about the Buffalo Soldiers, but the 6888 was a group of military women, black women, who were tasked with moving the mail during the wartime. And there were literally like 17,000 pieces of mail that had been stockpiled, and they had white servicemen who weren't able to make a dent in that. Those women went in there, and they had all of that mail to servicemen, fields, and everywhere within 6 months. So we have people like them honored in this, and also some current military people like the commander. We have to remember, and that's the beauty, I think, of the Black Archives, is that we make it easy for people to remember the heroism of Black people in this country and in this area. Every uniform in that exhibit was loaned to us by a service person in this area. So they're local people. They've done great work, men and women, and so we want to acknowledge them. And it's actually almost bone-chilling exhibit. You know, there are flags of the different branches and the military flag and the POW table and other art in that exhibit.
One of the things that And this came directly from the book I got there. Many people know the Black Buffalo Monument. So Black Buffalo Soldiers Monument is at Fort Leavenworth in Kansas City, Kansas. And there is somebody who was a Buffalo soldier before she was allowed to be a military soldier. Her name was Cathay Williams. She was the first African-American woman to enlist in the United States Army. In a time where women were prohibited from serving, she did it remarkably by posing as a man. Born into slavery in Independence, Missouri, Williams was relocated with her family to a farm outside of Jefferson City while she was still a child and did domestic work there until the Civil War. When Union forces took control of the capital city in 1861, Various slaves were pressed into military service, and Williams worked as an army laundress and cook. She made her way to St. Louis after the war and had trouble finding employment, and in desperation, disguised herself as a man and enlisted in the army. William Cathay, as she called herself, was assigned to the 38th Infantry Regiment, one of the African-American divisions, and became known as the Buffalo Soldiers. While never seeing combat, she served at the Jefferson Barracks outside of St. Louis and later at Fort Cummings and in Fort Bagnard in New Mexico Territory before being honorably discharged in 1868. She applied for a soldier's pension in 1892, but her application was denied, and she passed away soon afterwards. A monument to her legacy as the only female Buffalo soldier now stands at Leavenworth at the fort. So people don't know that there are some great people from around this region who were doing things way before there was any history. And she serves as one of those people. So the the Valor exhibit, how long has it been there at the museum?
It's been here this month, and it'll be here through March.
So if people want to get to see that Valor Museum, which is very impressive to read the, to see the uniforms, but not only that, but read the bios of the person that wore that uniform, they need to get there before the end of March, I would take it.
Yes. Yes.
So, go ahead.
But the there are other things in that exhibit that are worthy to. So make sure that you, when you come to see it, that you look at the artwork, that you look at the documents that we have on the wall, because they all blend into telling this heroic story.
And that's what I was just going to ask you, is what other things are there that people really need to see? I mean, I know it's February, it's Black History Month, but what are some things there that people are like, wow, I didn't know that. I didn't know the significance of that, that people really should come there and see.
You know, we do Black History Month 365 here. But I'm not one of those people who say that there shouldn't be a Black History Month. There very much should be. I appreciate February because it brings extra attention to what we do. So we try to rotate the exhibitions in and out. One of the things I think has had an impact on me is Lucy's Cabin. When Horace Peterson and his friend Tillman Stewart found out that there was a home where an enslaved woman had lived in Trenton, Missouri, they got in touch with the family who said, yeah, you can have it. So they took it apart, put it on the back of trucks, and brought it down here to Kansas City. And they reconstructed it in the old firehouse in 2033 Vine. And then when we moved into this building, it was reconstructed here. When young people come on field trips or with their families, you know, they always want to know, well, where did they sleep? Because our children are raised to think about beds and springs and mattresses. So we get to tell them a history. They get to see it with their own eyes. They get to see the community that so much of what happened then went on outside. So that's important. And I think it's one of those things that has made an impact, as well as the lynching project that we have here, exhibition.
We're going to take a short break, and then we're going to come back, and we're going to get into that lynching project. So you're listening to 90.1 FM KKFI. This is Cowtown Conversations, and I'm your host, Joseph Jackson. And today our guest is Dr. Carmelita Williams, the Executive Director of the Black Archives of Mid-America. Stay tuned right back after this short break.
Support for KKFI by Heartland Conservation Alliance, proactively working to conserve, protect, and restore natural lands and open spaces within the Kansas City region by improving water quality of the Blue River, creating recreational opportunities, and preserving natural and cultural heritage. Learn more about HCA's goals, values, public outreach, and education objectives, and discover upcoming events at heartlandconservationalliance.org.
Hi, everyone. This is Bill Sundahl. I just want to let folks know our thank you gifts for our 2021 Winter Fun Drive. Every single donor will get a 10-pack of 3-ply masks made right here in KC by Contour MD that were gifted to KKFI. And we've got for $7.50 monthly or 91 time a KKFI Frisbee. For $10 monthly or 121 time gift, a pair of KKFI sunglasses. And for $15 monthly or 181 time a KKFI boat tote. Boat is not included. And for $20 monthly or 251 time, a KKFI combo pack, which is the glasses, the Frisbee, and the tote bag. We also have the guest DJ certificate for $12.50 monthly or 151 time. So if you make that call, 888-931-0901. Again, that's 888-931-0901. Or go online at kkfi.org. All the thank you gifts are there. We certainly appreciate your support. Thank you to everyone who's given during this fund drive and all of our monthly sustainers. We appreciate you. Again, that's 888-931-0901.
Hello, this is Joseph Jackson, host of Cowtown Conversations. We're taking a short break, but you still have time to get your call in, so give us a call on our studio line, 816-931-5534. That's 816-931-KKFI. And have a great Cowtown Conversations day. And we're back. This is Cowtown Conversations. I'm your host, Joseph Jackson. Before I get back into our interview with Dr. Williams, it is our Winter Pledge Drive. And folks, while we bring this show to you every week and we volunteer, it's a labor of love for me, but we have to make sure that we have a platform to be able to bring you the show from. And that's why we definitely come out every year and we ask, because it's your dollars to help us keep the show on air. And we have a champions match of $100, and we don't want to leave that money on the table. So I'm asking people to call in and pledge, because it's here every week that you're going to hear Cowtown Conversations. You hear shows that you won't hear anywhere else. You know, next week we're going to be having Preston Smith back to talk about proposed property tax increases and how people can help combat those during the pandemic. You know, even at a time when we shouldn't have to do that, we're going to be looking at what we have to do to help keep a roof over our head without paying higher taxes here in Kansas City, folks. You know, we're talking this week about with the Black Archives about history, Kansas City history, and people that impacted that history. So it's very important that we have KKFI to be able to give you that message and that information. And we're asking you to please, you can go online and donate securely at kkfi.org. Or you can call in on the pledge line, which is 1-888-931-0901. Again, that's 1-888-931-0901. And Link Master Mix is...
You got it, baby. You got it. You know, we got that champion match is still going. It's going from now until the end of the show. So you can double your money at this time. And you know, when you listen to... Just take today's show in specific. You can hear this and you think to yourself, boy, I wonder if the government is paying for this or if the big corporations are paying for this. No, we are bringing you stuff that big corporations aren't going to try to make profits off of or that the government is not going to pay for. Over 80% of our revenue comes from donors just like you, people who see the value in what you're hearing today. And it's important. And it's important to us as programmers who put our shows together to see that people are giving some of that love back to KKFI during our show. So let's show Joseph Jackson what he means to us when he delivers for us every week here in Kansas City. 888-931-0901. Or online at kkfi.org. Let's get that $100 match. If you're all of it or if you're a part of it, everybody needs to be a part of making that match so that we can get $200 in the coffers. You know, not only are we paying for 100,000 watts, we're paying for a couple space heaters right now, too, to keep us warm. Don't forget us.
So we're going to get back to our interview with Dr. Williams. So, Dr. Williams, are you still there, ma'am?
I am.
So we left off when we were talking about the cabin of the enslaved woman, and you were saying, you know, explaining to our children as they come by that there's no bedroom, there's no indoor bathroom, you know, that she most likely slept on the floor. What are some of the things that the children say when they hear that?
Largely, they stand there with their mouths open because it's so far from their reality. But they're interested and excited about the way they cooked and to see where they actually cooked and ground wheat and washed their clothes and pumped water. So this is not a part of their reality, so they're really excited to see and to learn about this. And it's there. It's right visual and tangible for them. So they get excited. And they have lots of questions.
And you spoke about this earlier, and we teased about it. Many people may not know about the Lynching Project that's sponsored by the Equal Justice Initiative out of mm-hmm. Alabama. But the Black Archives is a part of that EGI project for Missouri. Can you tell listeners about the project and the role the Black Archives is playing?
Sure. We have partnered with them. There is a local group of people, the Community Remembrance Project Committee here in the city. And so we meet regularly and we talk about and work to make sure the people who were victims of racial murders are remembered, acknowledged, and somehow honored. So it is a citywide group. The Black Archives is just fortunate to be a partner in that we will house the museum. The project, the part of the project that we have is from emancipation to 1965. There will be a second part from 1965 to the present that will be housed at the Bruce R. Watkins Cultural Center. There's an amazing young artist. His name is Charles Swavey Jones, and he came in with his portfolio. And he had done already some amazing artwork depicting lynchings. And I said, Charlie, you're 20. Why are you doing art focused around lynchings? So we talked about it and how that affects the lives of young folk now. And then we talked about what Lawrence Rogers, a retired professor from K-State, named grotesque carnivals, and that it doesn't take long to murder someone by hanging them from a tree or a bridge by their neck until dead. So they would have to fill up that time, because the railroads would have offered discount fares and the hotels would have offered discounts for people to come to the lynchings. And so they would have carnival games. And if you won the carnival game, then your prize was that you got to cut a piece off the body of the person who was being lynched. So people would cut off ears and nose and fingers and toes. And then if you were the big winner, then you got to cut off the scrotum. And more often than not, people would put them in jars and put them in their windows or out on street posts and display them as if they were real trophies. They would also take pictures and make postcards out of them and share them with family members. So these grotesque carnivals were done at the expense most often of innocent black men and women and children. Not just men were lynched. So Charlie and I talked about it, and then he created this wall mural that depicts a scene. It's beautiful. You should see it. And then the next thing that we're going to do is we're raising funds now to create a hologram so that either Erastus Brown, who was lynched in Trenton, Missouri, or Levi Harrington, who was lynched off the West Bluffs here in Kansas City, can talk about their stories. And that would make it more interactive. And then we could hear their voices, in a sense, and make those stories more real. And also we're going to have the Equal Justice Initiative has identified 60 people in this area. So we know their stories. We know their biographies. So their histories and biographies will be part of the exhibit.
And not only that, but part of the Equal Justice Initiative project is to get soil from those locations, yes, where people were unfortunately lynched. And How many containers does the Black Archives currently have on display?
Well, we have four, and on April 10th, we're going to have a ceremony and collect a jar of soil from the West Bluffs where Erastus Brown was lynched. I mean, where Levi Harrington, I'm sorry, was lynched. In November, we went to Springfield, and there were three black men lynched there in the square. Two one day, and then it got so good to them, they went and got another one the next day. They knew all three of those men were innocent, but they killed them anyway. What amazes me about that is that there were 3,000 people in the square watching these murders, and not one person said, stop, don't do it, it's not right. So that's what we have to fight against. And then we have Erastus Brown from Trenton, Missouri. And the people there, their community remembrance project ceremony, they're all a bit different. But the baseline is that they identify as closely as possible where the body hung. And then they try to, then they dig soil from that spot and put it in a jar, put the victim's name, the city or town, and the date that they were murdered. And then a jar comes here to our exhibit, and another one goes to Alabama, to Montgomery.
To the museum. And there are over 4,000 jars in the museum, and that doesn't begin to scratch the number of people who were actually lynched during that period.
Right. Yeah, one of the things that we're doing here in our exhibit is, like the Tomb of the Unknown, we will have some other spots on the exhibit marked for those people. We know that we will never know everyone who was a victim of racial lynching, but we still need to make that representation in this exhibit.
Dr. Williams, we know that Kansas City is one of the documented cities where African Americans were unjustly lynched for crimes they did not commit. And we've talked about Levi Harrington, but I want to dig into that just a little bit more, that he was taken from police custody for the supposed crime of shooting a police officer, that he was someplace else. There were people, the witnesses that came forward to say that he was someplace else at the time. And the individual who actually killed the police officer turned himself in. He was tried four times. He was never found guilty. He ended up serving 2 years. But Mr. Harrington was taken out to the West Bluffs, hung on the West Bluff Bridge. His body was shot as he was hung. And only in 2018 did the city erect a monument to that heinous act.
Right.
And his memory and 59 other people who were documented victims, not the undocumented, but documented, that occurred in Missouri from 1877 to 1950. But a short period later, that monument was cut down and tossed over the crater there. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yes. And the police have video of six white men cutting it from the steel post that it was on and throwing it over the hill. The city retrieved it. It is here at the Black Archives now in our exhibit. But it's so blatant. I mean, it wasn't an act of emotional urgency. They cut it off a steel post. That means that they planned to do that. They had to bring equipment to do that. So we cannot just turn our heads and say, okay, this is something that's in the past, because the residual is still here. We're still suffering from that. So anyway, I was honored that we have that, the original monument here as part of our lynching exhibit. And Equal Justice Initiative is going to create another one, and we're going to put it back in the West Bluffs. We'll have to figure out a way to protect it better. But destroying the artifacts of history does not destroy the history. So we have to make sure that we continue to let people know what has happened here. Until we address it, face it, and address it, we can't heal from it. We can't do anything about that. So that's part of our mission.
So museum has an east wing and a west wing. Are there any other items or significant things that people really want to see if they come into the museum and come visit?
Sure. We have in the east wing, we have the cabin and the lynching exhibit, the fixed exhibit, and Valor, the temporary rotating gallery. In the west wing, we have a genealogy center. Country Club Bank donated 12 computers to us, and so we have set up a genealogy center so people can come in and research their families. We're still raising money for the software, but that should happen really soon. We have the Women's Professional Basketball Hall of Fame. We have a coffee shop and a gift shop, all by local artists. So you can come and look at the work of local artists. And upstairs at the West Wing, we have a big gallery. Lecture hall, where we have we've had everything in there, from funeral services to baby showers. It's our community room, and we rent that space out. We also try to honor people who have done good work here in Kansas City. For example, Alvin Brooks will be here on the 23rd at 1 o'clock reading from his memoir. And he is a man who has done amazing work here in Kansas City to bridge the gaps between the races. So we're excited about that. We also have a recording studio, and we've had a couple of projects where we are collecting the stories, the oral histories of people in this area. So we're busy. We have a lot of work, and we want the community to know that we are their partner. You know, we need community partners for sure. We're a nonprofit just as you are. So we depend on the largesse of others to keep going. But we also want people to know that we are their partner. We're here to help them in the ways that they want to see Black life, culture, and history illuminated and explained.
Will the, again, repeat when Mr. Brooks is going to be there, and will that event be a Zoom or be live in person only?
He will be here next Tuesday, the 23rd at 1 o'clock. We have a limited number of people that will be here live because of COVID restrictions and social distancing, but it will also be live streamed. So if you go to info@blackarchives.org and give us your email address, then we can get you on the list to receive a link so that you can view the program.
And that's definitely something. He's a part of a living. We've talked about past history, but he's a part of our current in history, and somebody who's did a lot to shape history in our city. How often does the museum change its exhibits? And again, when will the next exhibit start?
Well, the permanent exhibit, with my eyes no longer blind, is the permanent exhibit. And the Hall of Fame is a permanent exhibit. But the changing gallery, about every 6 weeks. We want to make sure that this doesn't become an I've seen it kind of place. So we want to always keep something new and challenging going on.
So if people want to get information about what's going on, is there a website or a link that they can, you know, contact to get more information, or be every time the events change, that they can be sent an email saying this is what's new, what's coming on next?
Sure. They can go to the website, www.blackarchives.org, or if they have questions, they can go to info@blackarchives.org, and someone will get back with them. Or you can call 816-221-1600. Or you can come by 1722 East 17th Terrace, Kansas City, Missouri, 64108.
And there's one other website that you didn't want to mention before we close out. The Kansas City Black History Book also has its own website. Can you give our listeners that website?
It's KansasCityBlackHistory.org.
So as we tune out here, Gary, get ready for Larry J. Do you have any other questions or comments that you would like to tell our listeners about the Black Archives and why they should come visit?
First, I just want to thank you for helping us to illuminate what's going on here at the Black Archives. We appreciate that. There is so much here that people should experience. And Black history for us is today. So our exhibits and the work that we do comes up to the current times. So we want people to come to experience that. We don't charge. We do need and appreciate donations. But Monday through Friday, 10 to 5, 1722 17th Terrace. Thank you so much. It will be people who have come here. We've had folks say, I've lived in Kansas City my whole life, and this is my first time. But I'll be back, and I'm bringing my husband, and I'm bringing my kids. It's that kind of experience. So come in here and feel the vibes and understand and see the history of African Americans in this area.
I would like to thank Dr. Williams for being our guest today and highlighting a true Kansas City jewel. We never end Cowtown Conversations without our Community Minute. Folks, please continue to be weather aware. Check on your family and loved ones to make sure that they're staying warm and have supplies. You know, I have friends in Texas right now. We're complaining because we don't have any heat. They're telling me not only do we not have any heat, we don't have any water in some cases, and the rolling blackouts are still continuing. So regardless of our situations, we're always blessed. So also, make sure you check on people. Folks, I know a lot of us using space heaters to stay warm. Don't plug them multiple ones into extension cords because that can lead to fire, and we don't want to have anyone lose their life doing this. So stay safe, stay weather aware, check on your loved ones. Join us next week as Preston Smith will be our guest, and he's going to discuss the 2021 property tax increases. For Cowtown Conversations, been your host, Joseph Jackson. Have a great day. Stay safe, wear a mask, and stay tuned for My Place with Larry J.
The French Revolution of 1789 not only propelled all of Europe into war, but also touched off slave uprisings in the Caribbean. On Saint Dominique, the free people of color began the chain of rebellion when French planters would not grant them the citizenship as decreed by the National Assembly of France in its Declaration of the Rights of Man. A bloody 13-year revolution ensued, a complex web of wars among and between slaves, whites, free people of color, France, Spain, and Britain that would eventually create the first independent black nation in the Western world. In 1794, France built upon the Declaration of the Rights of Man and officially abolished slavery in its colonies. Toussaint L'Ouverture, the leader of the Saint Dominique Rebellion, abandoned his Spanish allies, joined forces with the French Republic as a brigadier general, and turned his troops against Spain. In 1797, Toussaint was made commander-in-chief of the island by the French invasion. The defeat of the Spanish and British forces, Toussaint toward independence from France. With Toussaint as its governor for life, Saint Dominique was still technically a French colony, but was acting as an independent state. In 1802, Napoleon Bonaparte, who had seized power in France in 1799, sought to restore slavery to the West Indies through political guile and military force. Toussaint was captured and exiled, but the fighting continued under the leadership of Jean Jacques Dessalines and Henri Castroff. On January 1, 1804, Dessalines proclaimed himself ruler of the new nation, which was called Haiti, a higher place.
It is 10 o'clock on Thursday morning, and it's time on this radio station for My Place with Larry J. It's Mixmaster Link. I'm your promo man today, just trying to get that love started. It is 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio, and this is our winter pledge drive. And we're going to run a special deal throughout today's My Place. We're going to run a champions challenge from start to finish. The lovely Miss Kathy Peters is going to match the first $100 that comes in. That's from everybody, not just old school. And old school, I love you, honey. Thank you so much for being so kind to Larry every day and every time the pledge drive comes around. But everybody, let's make that call. 888-931-0901. Operators are standing by, or you can go safely on kkfi.org. Let's show some love to Larry J, 'cause it's all about that love thing. Are you ready, Larry?